This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Calcio e Cappuccino, now available wherever you get your podcasts. So be sure to subscribe and remind yourself to dive in. You can always hit us on the playback. Back again this week, as always, with my wonderful dulcet-toned co-hosts, Dre Cordero and Aaron West. We also have the wonderful, outstanding, perfect, in every way, Poppy Miller with us. So happy to have her joining us.
Hello, guys. How are we? Ciao.
I was about to say, how are we doing this evening? It is 11 o'clock.
Poppy, did I get you the best intro possible ever?
Christine, I missed it. The only thing I heard was Miller.
Wow, okay. All that extra lifting, I was going to just write you a sonnet on the fly. But
I believe you, though. Thank you so much. I appreciate whatever you said before I hopped on.
I say whenever she's on from now on, we just try to slip something by her in the intro just to see if she'll notice.
I feel very technically challenged trying to get on these spaces. Either my mic's not on, my speaker's not on, but today I'm good.
It's kind of like playing double dutch. You get the rhythm in and you jump right in and we're good to go.
That's true.
So, let's be honest. Poppy was placing a last minute bet. That's why she was a little bit late.
It's illuminating to find out which of us are becoming the degenerate gamblers of the squad. And honestly, I did not have Poppy at the top of that list.
I'm leading the way. Parlays are my thing, honestly. I'm already looking at what I'm going to put my money on this weekend, or more so tell everyone else to put their money on and then hope for the best.
Okay, Poppy, what am I betting my house on?
I'm going to say you should bet your house on Napoli to win and over 2.5 goals, because that seems to hit every single match this season so far. So that seems pretty safe.
I think
as a disclaimer, she just missed on a Napoli bet. So, you know, at your own risk.
Just don't add Raspadori in there, because that's where I fell last time.
I mean, honestly, I'm not a better. We talked about this. I'm not a better. I know myself. I stay away from those things. But that sounds like a pretty solid bet. Like Napoli to win and score 2+ goals feels like a
lot.
That one, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
honestly, it's hit 6 of the last 7 times, and the only time it didn't was against Roma, and we said take the under on that one. So, you know what? The more I think about it, the more I feel like betting is just becoming a lot of fun.
This is now a gambling podcast, by the way. We'll give you lines and over-unders.
Let me just tell everyone, listen to me. I truly know nothing.
If you or any of your loved ones suffer from gambling addiction, please. We in no way or shape or form endorse gambling addiction.
It's interesting that Poppy inevitably picked probably what will be the match of this weekend, Napoli-Sassuolo on Saturday at 9 a.m., that both Dre and Matteo will be on the call for on CBS Sportsnet and P+. That, I don't know, that might be a really close one. So you might want to conservatively bet. I don't know. What's the parlay, Buzz?
Let's not gloss over the fact that Aaron just gave us his first pseudo fake advertisement after we asked him some 3 weeks ago.
I told you it was coming.
Clip it in sneaky.
Thank you for noticing that. I appreciate it.
Aaron is really bringing us those Gamblers Anonymous sponsorship dollars. So
the timing was suspect, and it was more of a PSA, but it's we're in the right direction.
Listen, we're just moving forward. That's all we need to do, is just move forward.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we've had a really interesting last match week, as well as let's call it equally interesting Champions League clashes that we've just gotten through. I don't know, what was the highlight for you, Aaron, either or Serie A or Champions League?
It's weird to call this a highlight.
Okay, low light.
It isn't actual highlight. Inter. I in no way would have called Inter coming through that group, and they did with aplomb. So I would just like to congratulate the Interisti. I'm gonna try and be my most unbiased self, and they deserved it. Honestly, you cannot say they didn't deserve it. They showed that Champions League pedigree, and they fully deserve to be through.
Hear it for the Nerazzurri, I guess. I mean, yeah, they did. They earned it. I am in the probably very, very small minority in that I had only Milan and Napoli pulling their weight in Champions League, getting out of the group stage. And that seems to be maybe I underestimated, because now we've got Inter in the conversation and Juve tap dancing their way home. So.
That is a very rough way to say it, but it's true.
I think that's a very nice way to say it. They're tap dancing their way home. They've been absolutely disastrous. I don't think they even deserve to be in the Europa League. Not that they even have guaranteed their place in there, but I think they've just been so underwhelming. And we were just talking about it, but the way that they lost these matches and the way that they've gone out of Champions League and setting records for all the wrong reasons, I think it puts massive pressure back on them in the league now to start getting results to go their way.
I think it certainly forms an argument that makes it very, very difficult to have any answer other than we are now aggressively climbing the Serie A table because we have this singular focus. There's nothing to dilute or distract. I think it certainly will make it very hard to defend squad and management.
There's really nothing to defend about any of this. It's final nail in the coffin, and it's just another damning indictment of the management, the players, the performances, everything around this club is just it looks bad right now. It's kind of funny seeing Paul Pogba come out as a Modern Warfare character in Call of Duty today. It's like, well, that's the only place you're going to get to play with this man for the next month or so.
What's crazy is they also have to play PSG on the last match day, and you would rate Maccabi's chances of getting a point or something against Benfica better than you would rate Juve against how well they against PSG and how well they played, especially in the last match with Mbappe, Messi and Neymar. I mean, I feel like that could be a really ugly match for Juve, and for them, I actually think they must be praying that PSG are putting their attention elsewhere, but they won't be because they could win the group if they get points against Juventus. So I think it could get even worse.
It's a very embarrassing fixture for Juve. Very, very embarrassing.
Christine's very quiet. Go on, Christine.
That a lot of what's happening with Juve, and not that I'm disaffected, but I think it's a lot of reaping and sowing. This isn't just a singular season's worth of business decisions that have been missteps, financially or otherwise. They've been plagued with injuries and other errors. This has been, I think, in my opinion, probably a rebuild that's at least five seasons in the making, and nobody ever wanted to address it as such, and that's been problematic because Juve always fino alla fine is like that's the outward messaging no matter what. And I think that they need to have their come to Jesus moment a little bit.
But the thing is, what changes for the club? Because the manager's not going to change. You know, everyone's waiting for Chiesa to come back and hopefully make an impact and these players to come back. But Aaron, what do you think is going to change for this club in the immediate future?
Well, I think that's probably the why most Juventini have such overridingly negative feelings right now. It's not as if like, oh, it's bad right now, but we kind of see a path to it getting better. It's bad, and it seems like it could get worse. Nothing about this really, really seems super tenable in the long term. Like the way that they build the team, the way that they the structure of this entire organization is kind of rotted from within, I would say. It's not a fully footballing organization. It's a commercial enterprise with a footballing name attached, kind of. And what we've seen from a lot of teams that are successful around Europe is they kind of break it down in a footballing sense, like, hey, we need to go back to building blocks. We need to revamp our academy system. We need to revamp how we sign players. We need to revamp, like, our entire system from the bottom up. And signing older players on free transfers is not a system that is successful. So I think if the club were to kind of see that or show signs of seeing that and say, hey, we know we need to work on X, Y, and Z, it might be a more optimistic viewpoint from, I'm speaking for fans, but I'm mainly for myself, through the lens of maybe some fans think like me. And I don't really feel optimistic in the slightest, if we're going to be honest.
I got to throw in the highlights, though. I really do think that my optimism is in Miretti, in Sule, in Gatti, in Illings Jr. I think that we're seeing more of the kids than we ever have previously. And this is very typical Allegri. Where I had joked that it would require a partial lobotomy to see that many of the kids playing at once. And you know what? Maybe we needed to bring the entire squad to their knees to actually get them those minutes, because they were the bright spot. They were starting to turn around that second half of that match. You know, I think that that gives us something tangible to move forward with. But yes, structurally, globally, there's a lot of things that need to change within the organization to get them back on the right foot.
I think that's the first sign of the apocalypse, right, for Juve, when you bring out the kid. Usually, you know, I think the fans always want to see the kids, which is why when a manager is really, really struggling, like, one of the last sort of tools that he has is to play the youngsters, because it brings some excitement. It gives them a little bit of an excuse if you don't play particularly well. You say, well, I'm not very deep. My bench is, you know, I'm happy to bring out these kids. And so, like, while it is positive, in some respect, it's a very, very slim silver lining. It was a game that Juve had to win in order to stay in contention, and they trailed, what was it, 4-1, 5 minutes into the second half. So, you know, it took another some 20 minutes or whatnot to get some of the kids out there. And yes, Sule was good. At that point, you don't know how much resistance Benfica is really putting up. They made it interesting, but even a draw would not have been enough for Juventus. So I think looking for... The only like silver lining I see for Juventus is that soon they'll have a month off while the World Cup is going on, and they can sort of reevaluate how they're living in Serie A at the moment. Because it's fine if, like, I know you weren't that high on Juventus getting out of this group. I think most people were. But there's still a gulf between getting out of the group and finishing last in the group, in this particular group. And I think that's where they're headed, right? The logic would say that on the final match day, both teams, both Juve and Maccabi Haifa, likely lose. It comes down to goal difference. And in that case, it could be very bad news for Juventus. They finish fourth and they're out of Europe altogether.
Yeah, I think I didn't have them doing this poorly, quite frankly, but I did not have possibly even a modicum of hope that they were going to actually get out of group stage. The way that they actually do score their goals, especially given the injuries and everything that they had going in, I knew they weren't going to be, bagging them, quite frankly. I didn't bank on suddenly like Vlahovic scoring like 43 goals, because, you know, that would mean that we have a fully functional midfield.
Doesn't that just show how far the expectations have fallen for this Juventus side, though? The fact that you thought that they might not even get out of the group, when the draw came out, everyone pinned Juventus and PSG to be the two favourites, and perhaps for them to have the most easy group out of the Italian teams, especially when you look at Inter's group with Barcelona and Bayern Munich. So I feel like it's shocking, and every match day it feels like there's a new low for Juventus, or there's a new low bar that they've set. And I suppose the only silver lining is that they've got Lecce this weekend, which, I mean, if they lose that, maybe we get to a new low.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
anything's Lecce possible. Will be anything's like the possible when you play week. Negative football with fear. You can achieve anything like that.
How did this happen, by the way? I had some connectivity issues. I dropped out for a minute. I'm frantically trying to pop back in, and when I do, you guys were straight into the Juventus talk, which I think was the fourth of the we have four Serie A teams to talk about in the Champions League. You were supposed to be fourth, and I come back and there's this dark cloud hanging over the whole thing.
I blame this on Poppy. I looked around, I was like, where is Dre to help us?
Dre's like, wait, hold up. You know who I would like to talk about Napoli, because that's a vibe right now.
If left to your own devices, this thing would just be one big hashtag Allegri out the entire 45 minutes
that we normally. Let's talk about something good now.
Thank you. I would love to move on.
So let's move on to Napoli, who scored 3+ goals in all 5 of their games. First Italian team to win the first 5 since, what, Juve, I think, in 95, 96. The longest streak, actually, of 3+ games in the Champions League group stage since a Juventus side that actually did win the Champions League in 95, 96. That was the year they beat Ajax in Rome in the finals, the second title. For the Bianconeri, this looks like a Napoli team that I don't want to set expectations, but that's just me sort of hedging my own emotional bet for when inevitably, you know, winning the Champions League is hard, winning the Scudetto is hard. As good as Napoli have been, it's been 30+ years since they won a league crown, and so there's still a part of me that thinks it'll be a shock if Napoli end up being as good as they're showing us that they are, and yet you cannot deny that what they're doing in this Champions League against this competition has been absolutely historic. And they are the most interesting team in this Champions League group stage, because we expect City to be as good as they are. We expect Paris to be as good as they are, especially in these early stages when the pressure is not that high. No one saw this Napoli team coming with the changes that they've made, with the players they've been doing it, with the absence of Victor Osimhen for virtually the entirety of the group stage. Whether it's Raspadori stepping in and scoring goals, in this case assisting, whether it's Chirito Simeone, who gets the starting nod this time and scores the brace inside of just over a quarter of an hour. And when I say they're the most interesting team, they've given us all these like beautiful little tidbits, like Simeone becomes the first Argentine to score 4+ goals in his Champions League group stage since, by the way, the first was his dad in 1995, 1996. So, like, they're giving us all these, like, beautiful historic stories. To see an Argentine leading or helping to lead Napoli to something historic, to see players that you couldn't pronounce before the season started, like Kvara, come in and dominate against the likes of Liverpool, against Ajax, to score 10 goals against Ajax in the 2 matches. I'm struggling with the balance of projecting Napoli to win everything in front of them and stuck in the reality that they could come crashing down the earth at some point.
I think I kind of want to treat Napoli like a 21st birthday. Like, we're not worried about what idiotic things they've done in the past. I'm not really worried about like what stupid things they may do further on, but like, we're just going to celebrate this moment.
I want to remember them, and I can't say that much about my 21st birthday.
it's just a special, special thing that we're witnessing at this point in time. I'm not worried about if anything goes bad in the future. Right now, this team has scored 20 goals in 5 matches in Champions League and conceded 4. Yeah. Those are insane numbers, let alone in a group that has Liverpool in it.
I don't know how you get these stars to align like this, but if I can figure out how to bottle it, I will be a bajillionaire. quite frankly, and as Dre pointed out, Napoli have done this largely Osimhen free. He comes back. The man didn't even take a breath, just resumes scoring goals again. I'm like, what? I'm not complaining. I am thoroughly enjoying this, but what is happening? It's very hard not to get very excited about it.
And I was thinking, like, where do I find a weakness on this Napoli team? Like, where is the one like leg that maybe isn't as sturdy as the rest of them, that if that comes down, if they lose a player, you know, where does it go sort of sideways for them? And the only thing that I sort of picked out from the beginning of the season was there's not a ton of confidence in Juan Jesus. They have basically two really good starting center backs in Kim Min-jae and Ratmani. And so if one of those guys is injured, maybe there's a little bit of fragility at the back there, but they've been without Ratmani and will be for, I think, another few weeks. And Juan Jesus stepped in and hasn't been brilliant, but it hasn't affected Napoli. They still, another clean sheet in a 3-0 win against Rangers. They have clinched in emphatic fashion. I think it's nice that we have Napoli and Inter sort of stress-free on match day 6. Milan relatively stress-free going into the last one, although the job's not yet done, and Juventus sort of already out. And here's why. For me, it's always the the how, just personally as a fan, it's the how more than the what. And had Juve advanced from this group, playing the way that they have, using the, as Aaron said, negative tactics, I'm not as impressed. I am insanely impressed by the way in which Napoli have done it. Not just that they've done it, not just the number of goals, but in their own style, in their own identifiable way. They've scored a ton of goals by winning the ball back essentially like at the edge of the final third and counterattacking with four or five players where they only have 35, 45 yards to play with. And that's sort of what we saw building at Napoli last season, and they rotate all of these pieces in and out, and now they're doing it as best as they ever have. And so when you see that sort of identifiable positive style and it's effective, that's best case scenario for me, and that's why I'm dreaming like big dreams for this Napoli team.
I feel the same way, Dre. It's so interesting though, when I was watching the Champions League yesterday, the thing that stood out to me most, I mean, it was like the 86th minute, they're 2-0 or 3-0 up against Rangers and they still wanted more. It was almost like they felt like it was a scoreless draw and they needed points. It was almost like how Juventus should have felt playing in that game. And then when you look at the players that they're bringing in off the bench, I feel like that comes from how much competition has been built up within this squad. And even going back to Osimhen, when he comes on, he is so hungry to score. You saw it in his celebration. Yeah. They've got so much depth and drive on this team. And it's interesting when you look at where they were last year. They were down 2 points compared to last season at this point. So technically, they're not having as great a start points-wise as what they did domestically last year. But the team just feels so different. So I feel like it's very hard not to get excited when you look at the manner in which they're picking up all these points and the way that they're playing.
I think you've nailed it. I mean, you've nailed it in that it's that intra-squad competition, right? Like the competition that's been built into the squad. They're so ravenous to score the next goal, to continue to play well, to really just not beat the opposition, but dominate the opposition, which they have done in the Champions League, which they have done in Serie A. And it's because you have all of these examples of a player stepping out and somebody just coming in and doing the job, right? Osimhen is out, whether it's Raspadori or Simeone, they do the job. We raved about how good Frank Zambo and Giza has been this year and his maturity with this team and how seemingly irreplaceable he has been. Well, he goes down with an injury. Dombele, one of the other newcomers, comes in and they really haven't missed a beat with him stepping into that role. Like, I'm convinced that at this stage, there isn't a player that for a short time, not for the entirety of the season, Napoli could lose and completely fall apart as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, hear me out.
I will push back on that one.
Zielinski.
No. I don't think this team is the same if they lose Kim Min-jae.
Gotcha.
I think from the limited sample size I've seen, he has been so impressive to me in his stepping into Koulibaly's role, the way that he leads that line. I think Rahmani is a big loss, but I think if you lose Kim Min-jae in that back line, I think it is a very, very, very different back line. His size, his aggression, his speed, and his reading of the game and the way that he leads his line, I think would change that team very distinctly. But aside from him and maybe Zielinski, but I think they have the players in the team that can step in for him. I think Kim Min-jae is probably the single most important player in that team.
I love that. The way that you described him, like the adjectives that you use are exactly what you would use for Koulibaly, right? Like they basically like cloned Koulibaly in terms of his influence. Right. It's insane. Sorry. Go ahead, Cooper.
I don't think that – so counter. I don't think that anyone would significantly impact Napoli on field. I think that their Achilles heel, if there is one, it's Spalletti.
No way.
I think
absolutely no chance.
Yes.
One of the best managers in Serie A.
In what
he
way?
Is, but he's not your stereotypical clout manager who's seen like oodles and oodles of success. I think that if it comes a hiccup, it would be his limitations, not the squad's.
I don't know that he's ever had a team this good
tactically, right? Limited, yeah. Or like in the approach and like his mental stability when it comes to like winning a trophy.
I think that he doesn't have enough. I mean, yes, he's got Coppa Italia with Roma, Super Coppa Italia. He obviously going back to like 2005 Serie A coach of the year. But I think that among his colleagues, cohorts and managers, I don't think that he has the same experiences. But yeah, to Dre's point, he's definitely got a hell of a squad that he's working with.
See, I think the opposite. And even like looking back to last season with Pioli, a lot of people said that about him. Well, he's never managed to lead his team to anything, and he's always fallen short. He's only won manager of the month. He hasn't won anything of significance. And I almost like Spalletti to Pioli last season, with now he's got a deep squad that seems to be a real team first mentality. With Cavara, who is the most creative player in the league, you feel like you never know what he's going to do every time he touches the ball. It makes it exciting. They've got depth in different positions.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
I'm interested to see how Spalletti manages it, though, after the World Cup, when things start to get really condensed.
The Pioli comparison is a really good one. The Pioli comparison is a really good one, not necessarily because of, you know, style or, you know, temperament or whatnot, but Stefano Pioli, the title that he won as a manager with Milan last season, his first Scudetto as a manager, is the first trophy, the first major trophy that he's won since he was 19 years old playing at Juve. Right. So, yeah, there is something for having done it before, but I don't think it's necessarily a requirement. And I think when Spalletti, you have a manager who is more accomplished than Pioli was, who, you know, previously two-time manager of the year. And I think that this tenacity that we see, this energy, this again, ravenous desire to continue scoring goals and dominate the opposition comes from Spalletti. Like, and especially that it's a moldable team, a team that made big changes, not just in terms of the pitch, but in the locker room, right? When you think about Koulibaly, Insigne, Mertens, these are the biggest personalities. They're gone, and Spalletti is allowed to sort of reinvent the team with these new pieces that no one had ever heard of for the most part. And so I think that's his stamp. I think that's the biggest plus in favor of Spalletti that I could come up with. But he hasn't done it before, to your point.
Right. Yeah. I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm just saying that I think if I have to assess the entirety of the situation, I don't see it coming from players on pitch. I think it would probably be tactically or just a misstep on his part. However, I love Spalletti. With all being said, it's not a criticism on him. I just think if I have to pick a weak leg, I'm going for him.
Yeah, I really, really highly rate Spalletti. I think he's done incredible things with the team. I think the testament to what he's doing is how they're able to slot players in and out and not really see a drop off. That's down to management, in my opinion. You don't bring a player like, yes, they've scouted fantastically, but the way that these players are fitting into this team and the unity that you see with this team, the fact that we haven't heard a word out of a Raspadori, we haven't heard a word out of Simeone, that Osimhen comes in and just comes back into the fold and is playing so, so well. I think the unity in this team, I think tactically they're set up really, really well. I think his management of this team has been fantastic. I think if anything, this Napoli team will fall apart because of outside pressure. Like, if you've ever walked in the city of Naples, like, you can talk about it all you want until you like walk in that city and feel it. You can literally, it's palpable that the love for the team. You, like, if you were a player walking around in that city, there's no way you don't understand how much it means to every single person that's from there. And I think if they're going to fall apart, it's because of that. I think once it, gets really, really tight, and it those yeah. fans start yelling.
That is kind of insurmountable. Although when it's enjoyable, like I'm ready to just declare myself like artist in residence at Diego Armando Maradona Stadium and be like, I live here until the vibes are bad.
Yeah,
like I just want to soak
bad,
this in.
If it gets rough, terrifying. It's real, real rough. Uh-huh. it's real rough.
I'm not that tough. I'm going to be totally honest. I'd be weeping in the corner in the fetal position.
I've heard players talk about how much it really like can weigh on you, especially players like at Milan, Inter, Napoli, you especially in the San Siro and in the Maradona. Like when you walk into the stadium, when you walk around, especially in Naples, when you walk around that city, it's the heaviness is apparent. Like it, the shirt is literally heavy.
Is this scheduled?
Yeah. just
are,
one more thing.
Are you
just
the
one
real,
more thing that
the
stood
real
out.
Wet blanket on this conversation.
You know what was crazy? What I loved last week that we showed in the show was not only, you know, obviously so much pressure in Napoli, but in Georgia there is people watching Napoli games at movie theaters so they can watch Kavara play. I mean, how cool is that? By the way. There's only 3 million is the population in Georgia, which is like roughly the size of Connecticut. And they are showing Napoli games in the local movie theaters. I just think that's so awesome.
I adore that. The connectivity of ball.
I always love hearing stories about like small players from smaller countries that make it big. And especially like in NBA, like you get a Serbian player in like their entire hometown and everyone's watching, like everyone's got like a Doncic jersey. no, it's Kvara's story. I read a New York Times article about him, and it's just a cool story overall. Mm-hmm. Napoli's story overall is, it would be the best possible thing for our league. And I think our coverage, if Napoli won Champions League in Serie A, that would be...
Oh, my God.
No dream is too big. How cool would it be for Serie A, though, to have four different Scudetto winners in the last four seasons if Napoli were to win it this year? So it just shows how complex the league is.
Yeah. So should we move on to Inter? Because I don't... We want to go
this
negative.
Is this all Napoli show? Go ahead.
Yeah. No, just I think Inter have a lot to look forward to as well. Like they're probably the team that, you know, from the depth they were maybe a month ago talking about, you know, Inzaghi's future and you know whether he would whether he could really sort of take this Inter team to continue to contend, to now they're locked into the round of 16. They get back Romelu Lukaku, who comes in off the bench and scores. They will have this sort of time once the World Cup starts to sort of reevaluate. And we always talk about this being one of those two seasons in one. Like they may be sort of best positioned, even though they're deeper back on the table, they may be best positioned to grow into the campaign as compared to anybody else that's sort of not met the expectations so far. And the biggest part of that is Lukaku was brought back to give them that sort of goal guarantee that they'd had when they won the Scudetto and that they lacked when they didn't, even though they contended right up until the last game of the season. He showed you with the goal that he scored off the bench just what they've been missing, where he often looks like, you know, the grown man playing against small children, just out-muscling people, doing whatever he wants inside of the 18. And you talk about the way that Simeone and Raspadori have filled in. Edin Dzeko scores two big goals for them in the Champions League. He's really sort of been filling in. I don't think Correa has really... at any point lived up to the expectations in his reunion with Inzaghi. But in Edin Dzeko, you have a brilliant backup. And now you get your starter, your number one in Romelu Lukaku back at just the right time for Inter into the round of 16 and to make a real strong push for top four.
For me, it's not even them doing this without Lukaku that's impressive. It's playing without Marcelo Brozovic for long periods of time, who I think is the actual heart of that team. I think Nicolò Barella has really, really stepped up in the last few weeks. I think he kind of started the campaign. It looked like he ran out of gas last year in the second half of the season, maybe the last third of the season. But he's really, really looked like the Barella of old. His range of passing, the ground he covers. He's such a fun player to watch, and I hate to say that for an Inter player, but he's so, so good. Credit to that team. Mkhitaryan has been – and Çalhanoğlu in midfield have been fantastic. I would have never thought that Hakan Çalhanoğlu would be like a fantastic regista. Like, what's going on there? What are we doing here? I think the knives were maybe out for Simone Inzaghi kind of earlier on in the season, and he kind of looked at him calmly and said, "We'll be fine over here. Relax, we're okay. Chill out." So he's been a very calming influence. I was worried that the Conte bump had worn off and that this team would be too flat. They wouldn't have some of the bite that he instilled, some of the urgency. And to his credit, I think he's kind of evened them out a little bit, especially after kind of dipping towards the end of last season and maybe the beginning of the season. So all credit to that squad and Inzaghi.
So I'll push back a little on the Hakan Çalhanoğlu thing. And I know you said that you didn't see it, right? So it's your perspective. But I had high hopes for him when he came over because
of... I don't believe in him.
I get that. And you know what? A lot of Milan fans didn't either, because the moment I said that his set pieces, all I said as narrow as this, his set pieces are going to be a problem for the rest of this league. I wanted to throw my phone in a lake after the replies that I got for just saying that, which was like a factually true statement. The one thing that he's done well his entire career.
Nice thing that about a player that people dislike, you know.
Yeah. 100%.
But it's been backed up with statistics. Yeah.
But it's been more than just his delivery on dead balls and on set pieces. Like, he has filled in a way for Brozovic that I don't think anyone could have expected him to do. Like, the problem, the Achilles heel of Inter was supposed to be that Brozovic is irreplaceable, that without him, the team has to play completely different. He essentially fills two roles in one, as their sort of regista, deep line playmaker, and a recovery player in the opposition's half. Hakan can't do both those things, but he can do the first part of that. And he's done it in a way that has allowed Inter to continue playing the way that they're supposed to, the way that Inzaghi wants them to, without having to make sort of major style changes or huge tactical changes as a result. I think a lot of that has to do with just how good Barella has been. I'll disagree a little bit with Mkhitaryan. I think he's been okay. I don't think he's been anything impressive, but Barella has been so strong
than
in that.
I expected in that role. I won't say
okay, that's fair, passing,
but better than I expected in that role. And also, Çalhanoğlu's range of passing just gives him something different than Brozovic. He can pick anyone out on the pitch from anywhere, and it's kind of, and he can also, his shooting from distance just makes teams terrified, so they have to step out to him if he's within 45 meters of goal. Basically, we've seen him score from there. I still watch like highlights of his goals with Hamburg. Like, the man has, like, I don't know if there's anyone in football right now who strikes the ball more purely. I'm welcome to hear some of the examples that are set, because there are a few people that really, really hit the ball. But the way he strikes the ball is, like, every time he lines it up, you can just see the light go out of goalkeepers' eyes, and it's really fun.
I think even in the last match against Fiorentina, and granted, they haven't been the Fiorentina that I think they truly are this season, in my opinion. Barella opening their scoring just 2 minutes in this past weekend was like, okay, Barella's showing up. Lautaro, extremely predictable. I feel like they got hit the hardest when he had his sort of scoring dry spell, but whatever he did, whatever he's doing, I mean, it pains me to say, keep doing it, you know? And then Mickey got on the board, which is always nice, because I feel like I'm perpetually rooting for him, irrespective of squad. I feel like he kind of didn't really shine much at Roma either. But look at me, I'm on a roll.
You got that
saying,
Arsenal love for him, you know.
I do. You know, like, it's so weird how they posit that, and you always perpetually have this soft spot that you're like, you're not talking about my son. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, It's fine. But yeah, no, Inter are like, they had, I think, the most depth at the beginning of the season, and I thought they'd be formidable. And then, of course, the pitchforks came for Inzaghi. They didn't have a series of favorable outcomes, and now I feel like they're kind of rebounding. Granted, they're still, you know, sitting just above Juve, which doesn't say much on the Serie A table. But I mean, they're definitely getting it done in Champions League, which
Outlook is way more positive than Juve's, at least.
For sure. And that's what I'm saying. Like, when you look at the table, sometimes the standings don't accurately reflect the squad that you're actually dealing with.
And I feel like Inter have, they had like compared to Juve, Inter actually have a plan moving forward. And even when they go through a stretch where they're not getting all 3 points in the league or things aren't looking great, you always get the sense like it is going to come good for them. And especially lately when we've seen the players taking the accountability, even on social media and just the by the way they've been acting, it's almost taken the pressure off Inzaghi and given the fans more confidence, given the, you know, people watching them more confidence. But I feel like they're playing with more confidence as well. And especially now Lukaku's back, I feel like the biggest person to benefit from that is definitely Martinez. And what have they now won? Four of the last five games or five of their last six. So they're a team that I feel like when they start to get things right, go on a really good run, and it seems to be brewing in the right way for them at the minute.
Sorry, Puppy, what's this thing that you refer to? I'm a little stuck on, was it a plan? What's a plan, for you?
Maybe
it's a wild concept.
I know. Honestly, I know. We're not allowed to talk about Juve, though. Dre will mute me if I talk about Juve again.
No, I'll just add this, that Juve have as much of a plan as this podcast did today. And so this is probably a good place for us to leave it. We have coverage of Napoli Sassuolo coming up Saturday. Matteo Bonetti and I will be on the call for that 9 a.m. Kickoff. So do join us over on Paramount Plus. In terms of recapping the scenarios in the Champions League, Napoli and Inter both lose the round of 16. Milan with a foot in. All they have to do is get a point at home against Salzburg, and they punch their ticket. And Juventus are out of contention for the round of 16 and possibly out of Europe altogether if they don't get a favorable result on match day 4. Anything else?
Nope, you can catch the playback of Calcio Cappuccino on every platform that you get your podcasts, and you'll catch us again next week. Ciao a tutti.
Ciao, next time.
Grazie mille. Ciao.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.